I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, among other titles and hats the gentleman wears. This is the 338th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk the bizarro world. We're going to talk record high gold prices, record high silver prices, uranium ripping, rare earths, the government, the good, the bad, the ugly as it may be. But before we get to that, Mr. Hodge, how are you today, sir?
I have been on a whirlwind tour of the north half of this country, as you know. Drove across the state of Montana late last week to go pheasant hunting and drove back across the state of Montana yesterday, 12 hours to get back here. So pretty much left after we recorded the podcast last Thursday and have been relatively unplugged since then. It was a wonderful trip. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it during the podcast, but good to be unplugged. I see a lot has transpired in the past week in terms of metals prices and actions from the administration. And maybe you can lead us through some of that in this discussion. How is Gerardo?
Gerardo is well. Gerardo has COVID. I suspect it's likely as a result of the Cubs losing a very well-played series to the Milwaukee Brewers. Congratulations to them. They played some good baseball. We fought well. I was content with our season. I was content with us coming back from 2-0, defending Wrigley 2-2, ultimately lost the last game. I had an opportunity to win that game and just couldn't execute. So I think, you know, executing is a good segue. I got a little COVID, but I think that's, you know, it's a cold, it's whatever, it's not a big deal. No, look, things are well. I think when we look at the portfolio, we talked last week about how important it was going to be to start looking for value and how it's really easy right now to get caught up in the hype. I did a piece for Daily Profit Cycle, an editorial on Wednesday, and I talked about the fact that, wow, overnight we got like thousands of rare earth and uranium experts, right? And so, you know, what's driving that, you know, this surge in experts? Were they all just timid and quiet prior to, with all this pent-up knowledge that they just couldn't find a way to share with us? No, that's not the case, right? ChatGPT is on the case, the bots are botting. It gets clicks right now. It's hot. It's a part of why I personally, and you've played this well, but you did it before it was cool to do it. Why I personally have kind of shied away from the rare earth space, because I think valuations are getting a bit stretched with some companies. But look, that's being, as we talked last week, that's being fed by the Fed in part, but also by the government, which has made it very clear and made it very clear this past week that it is just starting with its stakes in mining companies and the procurement of critical metals. And look, on my end of it, you know, with Junior Resource Monthly and Junior Resource Speculator, and with the service that we manage and write together and you know, bet ideas for PPI, Private Placement Intel, I am extremely confident in the exposure that we have. But look, last week I took 1,000% profits on a uranium company I love that I think goes higher. I took 300% profits on a copper gold play that I think goes higher. And we touched on it last week. Why do that if you think they're going higher? Because I think my upside's a double or a triple from here. And I think, especially in this market, I serve my subscribers, readers, family and friends. I do them a better service if I'm looking for what I like to do most, which is find 10 baggers and 15 baggers and 20 baggers. And does it work out that way every time? No. Have we been on a pretty damn good run here the last several years? Yes. So the government, part of what you miss is the government being very, very open and transparent about the fact that they are going to continue this buying spree and procurement of critical metals here in the U.S. Thoughts on, you know, government and stakes and partnerships and where that goes?
Well, it's obviously been well received by the market. I see what happened with Trilogy on the original announcement when I was here last week. And then I saw what it did up another couple of dollars while I was out over the past couple of days. I saw something about Nova this morning, another project in Alaska. And then I've just seen bigger announcements from banks and other institutions about getting involved in however you want to frame it, right? Resource nationalism, supply chain security, securing future supply of critical minerals and resources. All those terms have been floated around recently. And it's nothing new for you and I, right? We were talking about the green barons of the energy transition 5, 6, 7 years ago, right? And it's good to see all the new found rare earth experts, no matter where they get their knowledge, if it's from ChatGPT or not, that rising tide is going to lift all boats. You mentioned stretched valuations. You're right. I mean, and profit taking. Those are two things that have been in my head and I know have been on the minds of subscribers because they're writing in about when to sell and things like that. And I'm trying not to jumble my answer here. You know, I've been on a couple of calls with Mr. Rule lately, and he was talking about on one call I had with him potentially going short MP materials. And therein lies the nuance of the resource sector and the things you need to know about it, which I know you know, especially in the rare earth sector. Which rare earths are you producing? Are they light? Are they heavy? Are you just making the concentrate? Are you sending that somewhere else to get, you know, further refined in, into the final products and magnets that are needed? Where does recycling come into play? Where are these deposits? And when I just a little chest pound for a second, you know, that one rare earth play, the recycling one that I've been on smoking for a couple of months. I mean, good Lord almighty. I looked one day while I was afield and it was up 80% in a single day, right?
Yeah.
So things like, and that was with the Canadian market closed, completely forgot about
that was
Canadian
a crazy
Thanksgiving.
Day.
So happy Thanksgiving to our Canadian friends and those north of Montana, which I was very close to. But look, rare earths are just one piece of that pie. We're in the same boat as a country, as a administration, as a military, as an economy. We're in the same position with many other metals. Copper, cobalt was in the news this morning, I saw. We haven't mentioned antimony yet. There's a company called Perpetua that has a $40 handle on it over the
past.
That
we were promoting it to a year and a half ago.
Correct. And those are some of the things we should talk about. So I guess I kind of did jumble my answer. But as far as, you know, selling, I wrote a pretty long chunk on that in the Foundational Profits October issue that went out last Friday about when to sell. And, you know, there's a million strategies. When you're happy with the gain, put on a 20% trailing stop loss, sell in tranches. For IRAs and retirement accounts, you know, I'm more of a sizing guy. And so I took the liberty just to reduce our gold and precious metals position just for the fact that they had become an outsized portion of our portfolio. So lots of ways to skin a cat. You say this is just getting started, and I have to agree, we've got a long row to hoe before we're anywhere close to independent or self-sustaining on the minerals front, but it's going to be in fits and starts. Trees don't grow to the sky. You're going to have to get consolidations at some point. Those will likely be dip buying opportunities. You know, I went into yet another metals ETF in that Foundational Profits issue, right? Just rinsing and recycling and pruning and planting. And then what else? Maybe we'll transition into some economy and inflation stuff, but this inflation is up near 3%. I don't know if you noticed. Meanwhile, oil is down at 60, if not below, it's below 60.
Yeah,
I have
58.
It here on my page. And so all the inflation is going into, as I also wrote in that issue, meat and metals. I mean, go buy a steak, for example. I mean, you'll see where the inflation's going. So a long winding answer that there, but Trump administration doing Trump things, Daddy Warbucks, as you said last week, I wrote, and I would expect that to continue. And we can debate, you know, the socialism aspect of that, but it's obviously been great for our portfolios and the spaces in which we dabble. So we'll take more of it.
Yeah, no, look, we've positioned very well for that. I do want to touch on two things before we pivot to the specific commodity sectors, right, and the overall indices. Look, JP Morgan is targeting a $1.5 trillion investment in what Scott Bessent calls an Operation Warp Speed-like effort but for critical metal supply and refinement, right? That's one thing. And then right after that, you know, we get an announcement 2 days ago that the U.S. Army is launching, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of it, but the JANUS program, J-A-N-U-S. And that's a 6-year plus effort by the Army and the Pentagon, with the goal of developing and constructing hundreds of these state-of-the-art small nuclear reactors. We mentioned last week, folks, that the demand part of the supply-demand equation was being under-explained by the analysts, right? And then they're restricted in a sense, so I understand why. But for newsletter writers and for people in the resource space that watch this every day, all day, and make a living from, you know, hopefully from trading your own capital, and then also a little bit from, you know, providing advice to subscribers, readers, family, and friends. But for those of us that do this for a living, you could have seen this coming, you know, again, years ago. We've known that there was going to be a deficit in the uranium space. We also knew that surprise demand would pop up. We're getting it in the lithium space, right? I had a great conversation with Ken Brinsden from PMET Resources a few weeks back, and he talked about how everybody's focused on EV sales and how EV sales actually are robust, but how battery storage and the fact that the battery prices have come down so low have made it to where capacity now is so high, and that just China turning on 40% of its unused capacity would create another deficit in the lithium space. So look, my point is we're seeing this across the board. There are a lot of ways to play it right now. I couldn't be more excited. And then we have gold and silver, right? I mean, we haven't even touched on gold and silver. You know, we're in a historic bull cycle when gold is at $4,300. Silver is at $54. These are the spot prices, not the futures. And we don't lead with that. We wait 14 minutes to even get to it. So with that, listen, let's get to it. Gold at 4,300 and silver at 54. Thoughts there?
I mean, the past 2 days, it's gone up almost $100 a day. I mean, it was 42 and change, closer to 4,300 this morning. Yields are going down. You know, the 2 and the 10-year yield are down. You're likely going to get another rate cut at the end of this month. So again, seeing the writing on the wall and executing on it. What else? I mentioned the inflation already. I could give you the levels if you want. You know, you're seeing a little bit of a consolidation today, but gold, as you say, firmly above 4,000. You know, the low end of its near-term sort of range now is like $4,050. These are weird levels to be talking about.
And it's at 4,318 as we speak. It's up some 2%.
So it's over 4,300. Look at that.
I mean, just today, it's up 2.6%. Yeah. Silver is at 5407 on the spot. That just changed in the last few hours.
Yeah, and silver's got sort of a 5-0 handle on the bottom side of its range as well as it trades. Where is it at? Over 53 right now? Has it hit 54?
5407.
There you go. So you're having daily moves in these metals that, you know, is clearly a bull market. People are coming in. This is something that we've anticipated and prepared for a long time. And now we're managing ourselves through it. I talked a little bit earlier about how I'm managing my position in precious metals, gold and silver. Go read the Foundational Profits issue. But look, there's not a lot to say. Inflation is going back up. The dollar is relatively weak. We're content to ride a near $40 trillion debt. The government is shut down and people look for alternative assets. All those things, you know, combining, coalescing at the same time to give us this explosion. You know, I try not to be hyperbolic, but this has been an explosion in gold and silver prices over the past couple of days. Maybe something I'm anticipating or looking forward to is earnings in the first week of November, last week of October, when these Barricks and Agnicos and Newmonts start coming out. Probably still got some more M&A to come, but a lot to like in the precious metal space. And I guess that's it. It doesn't come at the cost of the crypto side, but the crypto side has taken a relative breather after surging of late and has pulled back a little bit while the precious metals have continued to go. So not a lot much more to add there from my side of it. That's it.
Yeah, I'll add two data points. The VIX was up 23% today. That's, of course, the volatility index. I know you watch this like a hawk, Nick. And, yep, you know, it was up. If you need a narrative other than confidence is decreasing in, you know, the security of the overall system and definitely in the dollar and other fiat currencies. But, you know, they're all community banks were down across the board today. And whenever there's a recession and a stagflationary environment, the first loans to go bad are the higher risk commercial real estate, lower yield loans that were, you know, issued by community banks in a lower interest rate environment. And so, yes, you have rates and yields coming down a bit, but they're not coming down a bit relative to where they were 4 or 5 years ago. They're coming down a bit relative to where they were 12 months ago. So not a coincidence to me that the VIX is up over 20%. And meanwhile, you have all the community banks, big ones, like the biggest ones in the country, you know, down 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10%. So just something to watch, folks. That's a reason I think why the overall indices ended up down, you know, some half to three quarters of a percent after being up nearly a percent. Also a reason why I think, again, that hedge, that gold hedge and that precious metals hedge, I think that's why it accelerated the price so much after midday. People not wanting to go into the weekend, long community banks, short gold or neutral gold, waiting to buy the dip. If you were waiting to buy the dip before Nick went on his trip, you're buying it at $300 more an ounce. I mean, that's not peanuts when you're dealing with big capital, right?
Yeah, I mean, the VIX is at 25, relatively elevated. Hasn't been at this level since May when we were coming down off that April crash from the Rose Garden ceremony. I know time is a flat circle and everything's a blur these days, but you remember that episode back in April. That's the last time the VIX was this high. We've been having wide swings in the market as the VIX escalated, including last week. You know, we recorded this podcast on Thursday. I left. I drove halfway across Montana. I rested my head in Great Falls, and I woke up on Friday. and I think we had like an 800 to 1,000 point down move in the Dow on Friday. And that's when the VIX started to perk up. And then that was the day that Chinese was ratcheting down, you know, new restrictions on rare earths, et cetera. Trump tacoed over the weekend. I think I saw that trading. Trump always chickens out. We're going to have a meeting with Xi. We'll see how it goes. Stock market rips on Monday, right? To open it back up. And with the wider VIX, you can expect those wider moves. So not in trouble territory on the VIX yet. That doesn't come until 30, 35. What this just means is wider daily moves in the S&P and the components within the S&P, because that's what the VIX is a volatility measure of. So people definitely buying some puts. I'm getting a little scared. I know there's an eye on the labor component of the market. I know that the government shutdown gives people some jitters. But at the end of the day, the data is the data. And the data says, you know, the economy is going to grow at 3%. I think what the market is having some consternation about or having some difficulty deciding or evaluating is inflation going to be more than growth, or is growth going to be more than inflation? We're getting this back and forth because inflation is sort of ratcheted up. I think you're going to get a 3% monthly print the next time data comes out, which data still comes out when the government shut down. So it's just a weird fucking time to be alive. But anyway, nothing matters. The government shut down, but you still get all your data from the agencies. Okay. That's great. And so it hasn't been like this in a while because inflation was still ticking up moderately, but now that we're at 3%, that's right at the sort of GDP level. And I think the market is trying to discern, or like I just said, evaluate where that's going to come down for the fourth quarter and the first quarter of 2026. I will say this, I still see no recession for the next couple of quarters, right? Politics aside, government shutdown aside, just looking at the numbers, looks okay until the second quarter of 2026 through the lens of growth. And inflation is going to be the wild card because, you know, if they keep cutting these rates, the fucking inputs to inflation are just going to keep going up, and then we'll have to deal with that. But that's crystal ball stuff, and we'll deal with that when we get there. For now, economy looks okay, despite how you feel about how it's being managed. Man, I guess that's it. The metals complex is doing what the metals complex is doing. And we'll wait for this data to come out and deal with it as it comes.
I like it. I have to mention, you know, palladium and platinum, because gold and silver get all the attention because, you know, they're the prettiest girls in the party. But man, platinum and palladium girls are looking good right now. Those are up 5-6% just today, right? And so we're seeing levels there that we haven't seen for several years. That bodes well again for parts of the portfolio that we positioned when no one cared. And that's, if we can emphasize anything to people that are listening or reading the transcript of this, you have to keep finding value, especially in these markets, because there are a lot of companies. And I know because I have subscribers writing me, have you looked at this rare earth name? This one's on fire. Have you considered adding that one to the portfolio? It's too late for those, right? The ones that I'm holding, the ones that I think are still going to get some Daddy Warbucks, what I call and you call Trump administration dollars. I still have a couple in the portfolio that I believe are going to get some of that money, and I'm holding them, one, because I think they're anchored by a real asset, a real valuation. They're in top tier jurisdictions, and I know that as long as my commodity thesis is right, I'm going to be okay with that in waiting an extra couple of months before taking, you know, 1,000% profits or 600% profits. I can wait a month or two and see if indeed my hunch is correct. So the time to position for that was when we were visiting these places in 2016, Nick, when we were seeing the shortage, when we realized that antimony was produced in the 40s during World War II and that we never went back to really producing it in a meaningful way, and started depending on these metals, you know, from China and other places, and the refinement and the technology that was going away with it. You're a little late unless you find a new good story with an asset from a good management team that can bring in a good asset in this market. And that takes me to, you know, a couple of private placements that we have coming up, and then, you know, the premium portion of this podcast, which, you know, I'll give you a uranium name that'll be familiar to some of you because I've said it here. I said it 100% ago. It's up 130% in a month, and it's likely going to be up another 130% in the next month or two. But anyhow, you know, I say all that to say we have a couple of deals that we're putting the finishing touches on that we've been vetting that are good early stage deals with teams that we're familiar with that we've made money with before, and that are not overstretched or overvalued in this market. That is the way you maximize profits in this cycle, folks. Don't go chasing the sexiest stock on the blue chips. It's not going to be the way that you make the most money, and it might be a way you get hurt, right? Buying into an MP Materials right now. Sure, it's the talk of the town a couple of days ago, but it was down some 10-15% over the last couple of days. If you're putting real money into that, that's not inconsequential. You have to know what you own, you have to know what you're buying, and you have to know why and what your timeline and risk tolerance is. So that's my rant I'm managing in this cycle.
Like it. Platinum and palladium moving fervently higher hand in hand, which tells me a couple of things. You know, they don't always move hand in hand. There's a lot of switching that goes on in the PGM world between platinum and palladium, and they tend to run at different times. You know, going up hand in hand tells me that people are just buying precious metals, right? Whether it's retail investors or institutions or central banks, you know, this precious metal acceleration in gold and silver is now spilling over into the PGM space. I'll give you a free name, Generation Mining. It's one that we've already bought and sold in the letter. I don't believe it's in any of your letters right now.
Yes, I know.
But it's one that has a very large asset in Canada. A safe jurisdiction is fully permitted to build a large PGM copper mine. And you might go take a look at that, backed by a very large asset. You and I were involved, and still are, in a company in Brazil that I won't give you the name of, that has a large palladium nickel gold resource that's done quite well of late as well. And so, like you say, know what you own. The time to buy and position largely in these things was prior to the run, but that doesn't mean that there's not new opportunities that are going to emerge as teams get together and put assets into shells or CPCs. Or whatever it is, and we'll continue to vet those deals and pass them along, which is, I think, what you were just saying.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Mm-hmm. That's let's get to, look, for those of you that don't care for Gerardo or Nick's societal takes, this is the part where you could probably turn it off, right? For those of you that do, hey, we got a doozy. And I'll preface it by saying, for those that are new here, I am not really partial to either political party. I think along with the Fed, the Democrats and the Republicans are largely responsible for the tribalistic demise and the tribalistic attitudes that we take today in our politics. I think that started several decades ago. I think it's only gotten worse year by year. But I gotta say to my Republican friends, what in the fuck are you guys doing right now? The same group that was up in arms about a Puerto Rican artist called Bad Bunny singing in the Super Bowl. Mind you, he is the number two artist on the planet. I do numbers, right? I'm a numbers guy. He is the number two artist on the planet. And you could argue the number one, him and Taylor Swift.
Numero dos.
Yeah, you guys.
Here's the problem.
You got 4 months to learn that, by the way. Numero dos, say it. So it's him and Taylor Swift. Puerto Rico is a part of the U.S., folks. So when I hear the backlash and the uproar and all this fake fucking outrage from the right, and then I hear those same people defending, and again, this one, it would happen to be the Young Republicans chats that were exposed, right? And they're in there saying, I love Hitler, and let's rape some bitches, and those monkey motherfuckers, and all sorts of, if you want misogyny and sexual assault in your chat, and you want some racism in there, and you want some love of Hitler in there just for kicks, you got all of it in these leaked text messages. The vice president of the United States got up and defended this shit, Nick. And he said, oh, come on, I'm not going to get upset or get, just in a riff about some young kids' chat messages. These young kids are 35, 31, 32 staff members of senators running for local politics. One was a high school guidance counselor. These are people in position of power. Am I surprised? I'm surprised there weren't more anti-Mexican things in there. Maybe they just leave all that for Stephen Miller and his little goon squad. But outside of that, I'm not really surprised that that's the conversation and dialogue that goes on behind the scenes. And honestly, I'm not surprised. I guess what I'm trying to ask you, Nick, are we at the point of peak hypocrisy? If you are that mad about Bad Bunny but can't condemn, I can talk about raping women and loving Hitler and all the racist stuff that was up in those chats. Is that peak hypocrisy, or do you think we got some more to go, man?
Well, I think it's plateaued hypocrisy. It's at the peak, and it's just been plateauing for long-ass time. I heard you mention fake outrage. I'm pretty sure I gave a talk many, many years ago at the New Orleans Investment Conference that specifically had the term fake outrage in it, and that was years ago, and we just continue to be at that level because of the, again, tribal, partisan, political and environment that we're in. I don't want to play both sides-isms, and I don't want to give you examples of, social liberals not doing the same thing, but certainly poo-pooing other groups at other times in recent memory. So I'll just take it back to the fourth turning and say that, we're at extremes. I mean, it's clear to see, and these extremes are getting expressed in various ways, including protests and violence and chat room back and forths that are distasteful and discolorful. I don't know much about the Young Republicans. I had heard a saying once that says, if you're not a liberal, I think it was Winston Churchill, if you're not a liberal in your younger years, you don't have a heart. But if you're not a conservative in your older years, then you don't have a brain.
Hmm.
And I've seen some of these videos of the, I think they're Young Republicans. Maybe you've seen them. There's like a kid on a private jet. He looks like an SEC douchebag with his fucking vest on and shit. Clearly doesn't have enough world experience to be discussing the things that he's discussing. And someone is clearly feeding him these things to say. So in those terms, I view them as just a marketing extension or a lobbying extension or a media extension of, whatever political group or entity wants to get that messaging out. And frankly, whether it's coming from Young Republicans or Young Democrats on the social side of things, I think it's a whole fucking heap of bullshit, as you know. I'm going to talk about Eastern Montana for a second, because I just spent a bunch of time there. It's a town, I'm not going to tell you the town because it's way too small and I don't want it to blow up and I don't want to impede on the guests who brought me there. It's a very, very small town of less than 250 people. There's one bar with one bartender and a post office and a bank, and that's it. And I spent some time there in the bar talking to the farmers, listening to the conversations that were happening. We went to a couple of nearby towns. I mean, these are podunk towns, right? Two bars on a gravel main street, and that's it. And I don't think I heard mention of any of this in any capacity the entire time I was there. I didn't hear anything about Trump. I didn't hear anything about liberalism or progressives. I didn't hear anything about government shutdown. I heard talk about the varsity volleyball team from the local high school is what they were interested in. In fact, one day we went to the bar because to watch the kickoff of the ALCS, and they had on the volleyball game from the local high school, right?
Too
intimidated to ask them to change. And so I don't want to get on a rant about real America and hardworking farmers and things like that. But I do think a large part of the country is too busy trying to harvest their fields or make ends meet or get their kids to daycare and do their 9-to-5 to care about a lot of this stuff. And those who do get amplified because of the climate.
The algorithm.
For sure. And so I'm probably way off in the moose pasture now on the response to this question. But, you know, there's a lot of shit that's gone on, that continues to go on, that will go on politically that I don't agree with, that a lot of other folks don't agree with. And I'll continue to pound the table is, you know, point out the violation of the Constitution when you can see it, point out the violation of people's rights when you see it. Rights don't require the impediment of someone else. If you think you're entitled to something and it impedes someone else, that is not a right. Worry about yourself, worry about your family, worry about your success and your execution and your process. And God, man, I don't know. I mean, that's as far as I've gotten with it. I know there's things going on out there that are close to home for you. And I don't know. I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but
there's just a lot going on. Yeah, it's just that kind of time.
It's that kind of time. And I've gotten to the point now where it's like, you know, I'm doing the fucking Madonna. I'm building like a boxer on myself and saying like, no, I'm not going to engage in some of that stuff because I don't have time for it, or I don't think it's going to move the needle. And now I'm starting to really ramble. So yeah, man, I mean, Trump is obviously, all over the place and runs his mouth. And I don't agree with some of the shit he says. I don't agree with some of the stuff he lets continue that was previously passed in terms of women's rights. And then obviously there's some stuff I do agree with, but, I'll just leave it there. You know, it's a tough time. That's it.
Yeah. That's the other thing you missed, when you left on your hunting trip. We were giving out Argentina $20 billion because China quit buying our soybeans and the farmers, you know, were hurting. So now we're talking about bailing out the farmers and giving Argentina $20 billion so Argentina can tell China to go buy our soybeans back again. But we just doubled that. We're going to give them $40 billion now. But the government's going to stay shut down because the Democrats won't agree to double the premiums that already doubled under, you know, Obamacare, which was also a flawed plan. And it's one big circle jerk of incompetence, in some cases racism, in most cases classism. And man, I hope you're right that this is like, at least everybody's got their cards on the table, right? At least it's being more transparent. The stuff going on in Chicago with ICE, you know that it's not about them going and getting the baddest and the meanest and the rapists and the people that we all want to see locked up. You know how we know that? Because by ICE's own numbers, of the 1,000 people they've detained, 1% had criminal records. That's how we know that. Again, I'm a numbers person. This is data, folks. This is an opinion because I come from a Mexican background and I happen to be Mexican American and I happen to love both countries. When I see that we can't afford, you know, to put social safety nets, whether you agree with them or not, at the most basic level, for our mentally ill and for people that need medical care. But we have the money to go spend tens of millions of dollars launching missiles on Venezuelan oceans and shores on canoe boats that couldn't be carrying more than 100 bricks of coke if that's what they were doing, if they were maxed out, whether you believe that any of that was true or not. It's just a scary time. There was a guy in Chicago that got a $130 ticket for not having his papers on him. He was here legally, by the way. He just didn't have his papers on him. It's a lot, so, folks.
Yeah, there was some stuff I wanted to get out that you reminded me of. So thanks for coaching me along. So some of this is advertising, right?
Yep.
Some of this is red meat for the base. Because it's not really consequential if you arrest a couple of people or if you fine somebody $130 for not having his papers. But that stuff runs circles on the media, which is what sure. I was just saying. It gets amplified. And so for the base, right, for that Trump base, for that MAGA base, I mean, that's nothing but red meat in the tiger's den, right? But again, the Democrats do the same shit. Like, I remember when they were sure. putting, like, you know, like the... whatever, the trans Navy generals or,
yep.
you know, the doing that social stuff and putting that right in your face, right? Like, that's advertising for the progressive base. So
yep.
both sides do that, and neither side, that doesn't make it right, of course, but just a little both sidesism there. And then parsing it out is interesting because I noticed, I'm going to go back to Eastern Montana now, and we were talking to one guy who owns like the local farm co-op, right? He sells like the farm parts and things like that. And he was lamenting that one lady from a town over had bought up like six of the houses in the downtown area there. And there's not many houses. And he yeah. was saying, you know, one person owning that many houses makes it tough for, you know, for this town to grow, for a young family to come in and buy a house because they have to rent and things like that. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, that's capitalism, bro. Like,
sure,
right? So, but people, even in Eastern Montana, see that and want what's best for their town, right? But they don't frame it in terms of, oh, that's socialism. He was essentially advocating for some socialism. I mean, if you want to, you know, sure. drill down into the end of it. And certainly I don't think this guy who owns a co-op in Eastern Montana is a socialist. Right. But he doesn't go down on it in those terms. Same with the crops, right? Because you mentioned the soybeans and the and Argentina. I mean, and we've talked about, you know, the handouts to farmers on this podcast before
sure.
and the aspects of socialism that that entails.
And the left does it with their causes and their foundations and their charity groups and all of that. And yeah, all of that.
Exactly. Well, what I'm saying is I don't feel like the middle of the country, right? Like these folks that I was spending time around, they don't have time, nor do they care about the political spectrum, right? Like they're just trying to make their farm succeed and go on. And maybe I'm harping on that too much because I was there the past couple of days, but they definitely get the government, not handouts, but sometimes handouts as well, yeah. right? For crop payments and, you know, certain fields, they leave the stubble higher and they get payments for that because it, yeah. you know, prevents erosion and stuff like that. They can let people in Montana, you can let people hunt your property and you got the hunters have to put a little tag in and they get so many dollars for every hunter that's allowed to do their property. So they're in these government programs, but they don't view it as handouts and talk about it in those terms because I don't know, it's just not a handout to them. I don't know if I'm making any sense or not, right?
I
feel like some of these things get politicized because that's the culture and the time that we're in, but they just view it as the government, right? They don't view it as the Trump administration needs to pay me for this crop or the Biden administration needs to pay me for this crop. It's the government, right? So, again, I don't know if I made any sense there, but I think it's par for the course of the times that we're in, the way this stuff gets talked about. And honestly, I think the parties like it that way, you know, like they don't let in third parties to debate. They clearly... have their own issues going on. I mean, look at what they did with Joe Biden, fucking Weekend at Bernie and him for the time there. And Trump again has his own issues. And I take issue with plenty of the things that he says. So I'm starting to give you a little bit of word salad and ramble, but just hang in there, everybody, and try not to go insane. And again, focus on what's closest to you. And unless it's egregious violations of, you know, what we hold near and dear in this country in terms of the Constitution, then I'm trying to just insulate myself from it a little bit.
Yeah. And I'll be absolutely clear. I do believe what ICE is doing, the way that they're doing it, is an absolutely egregious violation of the yeah. Constitution. Let's be absolutely clear, because I don't want people to confuse what I think is very consequential, like this being allowed to happen and endorsed and sponsored and cheered on by the people in power. I don't want people to think that that's as serious as young Republicans being racist and sexist and loving Hitler and saying what they said in a group chat. Will those be future leaders? Maybe. Well, that's what that organization is set up for. But what's happening here is far more consequential on a constitutional basis, regardless of who it's happening to, than some of the other stuff that makes the rounds on the algorithm that is amplified. And I think that was to your point right there, right?
Yeah.
Keep your eye on the meat and not so much on the bone.
Well, let's see if we can get some court cases or some stays on some of that stuff then for sure.
Let's see. It's a lot of talk, right? Let's see what happens and let's see where it goes. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast, because again, it's a bull market.
To be clear, the government's still shut down, right? Because I had to ask yesterday.
Allegedly, I don't know. I'm still getting my mail. There's still press conferences every day. Argentina just got $40 billion. Another canoe got blown up in Venezuela. I have no idea. Stephen Miller's still out here being the little racist that he is. It doesn't sound like the government. Doesn't feel like the government shut down. It feels like government is more prevalent than I've ever felt it. And you know, some of that is the immigration stuff that I hold near and dear to my heart, and the Constitution, which I hold near and dear to my heart. And, you know, some of it is just some of the other stuff that's going on that I just can't believe is actually happening. But it's a bizarre world, man. That's for sure. It's a bizarre world. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. We have Do some it. Picks. I'm heading out of the Del Real. Hopefully I won't have COVID next week. Along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 338th episode of our weekly therapy session called Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone.
See you.